Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Now back to ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The Small Business Advocate, Jim Blasingame.
Welcome back. It's 34 after. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast-to-coast. If you'd like to give us a call and talk to our good friend Mike Menzies, the president of Eastern Bank and Trust and the bank representative, the banking representative on our brain trust, Mike is an outstanding resource for us. You can give us a call, 800-531-3815. Michael Menzies, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Good morning. Good to be with you.
It's good to have you back. Eastern Maryland, lovely, beautiful downtown Eastern Maryland. I have been there. It's a great place, great part of the world. And are the geese still there?
The geese are still here, yes. We have given them a reprieve. As of the end of January, we are no longer allowed to gather them together and take them to our dining room table. So they're kicking back and waiting for it to warm up a bit so they can head back to Canada.
So they don't even move on farther south then? They spend a lot of time there in the
Bay?
No,
there's some geese. Remember, there are three flyways, the West Coast,
yeah.
The Middle Flyway, and the East Coast, and we're on the Eastern Flyway. And our flyway goes down into the Carolinas, so there are a few geese that that linger on down the Bay
mm-hmm.
into Virginia and North Carolina.
How many would you estimate there are? Have you heard any estimates?
72,315 geese
wow.
came to this area.
See, a lot of people wouldn't think Mike. See, I knew Mike would know that number. That's the reason I asked him that. But that's got to be a beautiful sight to see those birds coming through there like that in the flyway.
Oh, it
basically goes right over your house, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. folks, that wasn't a joke. I'm literally, I know it goes right over his house. Mike, let's talk about the economy. What are you seeing out there in your view of the economy? What are you seeing?
Well, remember, we're an agricultural region, and we're not far from D.C., so we're somewhat of a bedroom community of D.C. So we have, vegetable soup in that there are segments that are D.C.-related, like Homeland Security and the D.C. ramp-up in D.C. that are hot as a firecracker. So some of those elements in consulting and military and the like are really rock and roll.
I call that the artificial economy.
The artificial economy might be a good description, but it's the U.S. government economy. It's
mm-hmm.
it's what we're all financing with our deficit. Then the other core economy components that are consumption-driven seem to be waiting to see what kind of a year is going to evolve. Retail is very, very soft in some sectors, but then again, January, February, March can be a soft time for us here.
I keep hearing that word used more and more, waiting, putting our plans on hold. I keep hearing those kinds of references. Is that what's happening to our economy right now?
Well, you know, I don't know that I have a mature macro view, but my personal view is that I am in anticipation, along with, I think, many others. Whenever there is an interest rate environment like today, when there's a lack of demand for certain types of loans, and when the markets are soft, as the stock markets are, when capital formation is soft, it would suggest to me there's a little bit of a waiting game going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, corporate America isn't out spending gangbusters on capital investments.
They've got cash. They're piling up cash, aren't they, the major corporations? Have you heard that?
Well, again, I'm not really tuned into the major corporations, but I think that. But
Mike, I keep hearing about all these big companies that even if they're not profitable, they're piling up cash for and I don't know exactly why, but if it ever breaks loose, if we ever get to the point where we can take our hope off of hold,
right?
If it ever breaks loose, I mean, what's going to happen then? That sounds like maybe. You know, there's a lot of pent-up demand and there may be the funds to pay for it.
Oh, I think there's pent-up demand. I think that in some sectors, you know, again, it depends. Housing is rock and roll.
Right.
Housing in this country continues to take off, and in our region, housing is just out of control.
Technology's on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, technology's on the other end of the spectrum. So I think vegetable soup does kind of describe where we are. We've got some very specific sectors like housing and government, defense and military that are on a roll, and the core economy continues to kind of bounce along.
Right. And small business owners are finding that if they're operating their businesses well, they're hanging on, if not thriving. And if they're not operating their businesses very well, then they're not around anymore.
Yeah, no doubt that this is a time that businesses are tested. If you are not in a housing-related industry, if you're in something other than that, then you're being tested. I would think that the auto industry will be tested this
year.
It is being
tested even as we speak.
Yeah.
Michael, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break, folks. We'll be right back with Mike Menzies. When we come back, we're going to talk about some different ways to capitalize your business besides straight bank debt. Mike's going to help us understand how that works. Very important topic, something we're all going to have to focus on in the future. 800-531-3815. Stay with us. We're back at 17 till. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, in the hour straight ahead, Leo Hendry is going to join us. Leo Hendry Jr. is a guy who wrote the book called The Biggest Game of All. He's going to talk to us about the Ten Commandments of deal making, but also I'm going to get him to talk to us about some of the big deals that have been put together over the last decade or so, and get him to tell it. He knows about most of them. He's been some of them he was actually part of, like when AT&T acquired their broadband company. And so we let him tell us about some of those deals and whether he still thinks that they were good deals. And that's coming up in the next hour. Leo will be followed by Steve Chandler, a good friend of ours who's got a new book out called The Joy of Selling. We're going to talk about how to become better salesmen, and that's coming up in the next hour. Mike Menzies is our guest. He's the president of Eastern Bank and Trust out of Eastern Maryland. And Mike, in Jack Welch's book, he said that one of the reasons why small business is thriving, and one of the reasons why it's going to continue to be important into the 21st century, is because major corporations are doing so much outsourcing. And this is true. You and I have seen it, and we've talked about it quite a bit on the show before. The fact that small businesses, smaller and smaller businesses, are being entrusted with a pretty significant part of the marketplace, and in a way that we've never been before. You know, 25, 30 years ago, if a factory needed something, or if they even down to the mowing of the yard, they had their own employees that did that. But now, companies, major corporations, are finding out that they need to be focused on their core competencies and farming out all the other stuff. And if that's the truth, then that's good news for small business. Except that we've got to fund that growth with capital. How are we going to do that?
Well, I do think it's the truth, because we see frequently small businesses and entrepreneurs and individuals starting up their businesses, and they're supporting an outsourced activity of a large business. That's part of the economy of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Where to get capital, other than having a friendly banker who overlooks credit standards, I think there are three forms of capital.
By the way, would you send me that person's address?
Yeah, exactly. there are three basic forms of capital that a business employs, I think, and I classify them as intellectual capital, human capital, and financial capital. And intellectual capital comes from reading Jim Blasingame's book, Small Businesses Like a Bunch of Bananas, and getting your head straight. But beyond that, intellectual capital is what really drives all business. And it comes down to that old adage of a business plan, having a plan, having a document. And there are so many resources available for intellectual capital. There are small business resource centers, there are chambers of commerce, there are universities and community colleges. You can use SCORE from the SBA. You can get a SCORE mentor to work with you to build a business plan. You can go to your banks, and they've often got libraries where you can find software, how to do a cash flow budget.
If you want to become smarter at being a small business owner, it's never been easier, has it?
No, it's not. And, you know, that you take the web, you take the Office Depot site,
right.
You take the IBM site, the information that's available to create intellectual capital is limitless. Mm-hmm. But without intellectual capital, then you basically become a worker. You become a pusher. You need intellectual capital well wrapped into a business plan that focuses how you're going to leverage your knowledge into profit. And the second form of capital then becomes human capital. Oftentimes, whether you're outsourcing or creating your own thing, you need that human support, that human intelligence, and that human effort. And you can go not just to the retired workforce with an aging America. Just go to Walmart, and you'll see an example of that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you can go to your local workforce investment boards if you have a WIB or a workforce investment board, and sit down and talk with them about the human capital that's available in your marketplace.
This is so important that you bring this up, Mike. I'm glad you're doing it, because we have to realize that, and I'm glad you're identifying it as capital. And folks, he doesn't mean that in a, you know, in a demeaning way at all. He means it in a very positive and positive way. And the thing is that we've got to make sure that we realize that when we invest in people, that we have to invest in the right people, don't we?
Absolutely. And investing in people includes investing in people who believe in you and your mission and the mission of the enterprise, whatever that may be, and they identify with you. They are not just there from 9 to 5 to pick up the paycheck and go.
Mm-hmm.
Developing the right human capital is probably the greatest challenge of all business.
There's no question about it.
And then we get to the question you asked me, I guess, which is financial capital.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you get the money?
Where's that money going to come from? Because as you say, I mean, our dreams and bank regulations sometimes are at odds.
Absolutely. But there are lots of forms of money outside of a bank. And the easiest way to get it is to marry it. But if you can't do that, if that isn't available, and to most of us it's not, then you begin to leverage those sources that are willing to take a risk in your business.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly the SBA is a core source of capital. And the SBA 7A loan programs mm-hmm. go up to, I believe, it's $250,000
yep.
or more at times, and they represent a form of capital formation that banks use to transfer risk to the SBA to help people get running.
But there's another method that you've mentioned to us before, and I want you to bring it up again when we come back.
Okay.
I want you to talk to us about some of the things that you're doing, some of the creative things that you're doing with your bank, with some of your customers, to help them leverage their dream through this financial part of the capital aspect. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. It's 10 till. We'll be right back with Mike Menzies.
Gonna take a freight train.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with Mike Menzies. And folks, let me take this opportunity to tell you what kind of a banker Mike is. He's an independent community banker. He's the president of a bank that's owned by local folks. They're the board members, the stockholders right there in his community. All the decisions about whether they do business with somebody or not is made right there by local people. And you've got one of those in your community, maybe more than one, maybe two or three, but typically most communities have at least one. And I want to recommend to you that in your banking relationships, I encourage you to have at least two banks that you work with, but I want to encourage you to be sure to make one of those an independent community bank. It'll make a difference. It'll be interesting. You'll be very much interested to see the differences between dealing with a community bank and a larger bank. And you need both kinds of relationships, because if you're going to grow, you know, one of these days you might outgrow your independent community bank. But for most of us, we won't. And they sure can make a difference. I know my community bank, Mike, has been, that I've worked with for several years. I wouldn't be here if it weren't for them. And I don't know how what more of a vote of confidence I can give them than that. And so anyway, check those out. And if you're not sure about that, you can probably go. What is it? ICBAA.
ICBA. ICBA. Yeah. Independent
ICBA
Community Bankers of America.
Dot org.
Dot org.
Dot org.
ICBA.org.
And you can find out any independent community bank in your area that's a member of the ICBA will be posted there on their website. You can find out who's nearby, or just ask somebody about the bank, and it'll be easy. It'll be something like the First National Bank of whatever or whatever. It'll have a name that'll sound independent. And
well, if it's a community bank, it'll be on the ICBA website.
Yeah. Mike, talk to us about what banks are doing and are going to be doing in the future that are a little bit different wrinkle from just making a loan.
Okay. Let me throw out a few quick financial alternatives to borrowing money, because I know time is on the is on the fly. But some banks have formed CDCs, community banking, community development corporations, which allow banks to invest up to 5% of their capital in a small business.
5% in a small business?
5% of their capital in CDCs.
Into the CDC.
Right. So some communities have banks where they pool together a couple of million dollars in a CDC, and that money can then be invested in a small business.
Not loan.
No, this is an investment, literally.
Mm-hmm.
This is an equity position, or it's a loan that's a subordinate debenture or a subordinate
mm-hmm.
loan. There are not a lot of those around. Probably one of the most popular capital formation tools is to use trade credit and vendors and leases and landlords, and we've seen that frequently. We recently saw a company that got together, didn't have a lot of money. They got the owner of the building to build out the building at their expense, to build the leasehold improvements into the lease, to abate the rent on the building for 6 months. And that creates capital. You
mm-hmm.
can move into a fit-out space using somebody else's capital. That's your capital. Getting lease terms on equipment and even furniture and the like is not uncommon for
so that
a
you don't have
operation.
To borrow that money from the bank.
So that you don't have to go
borrow
that money
it from
the bank.
From the manufacturer.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon if you're fabricating or manufacturing or doing in particular in the in the IT world, to get vendor terms where your supplies, you get extended terms, 90 days or more to extended terms. Venture capital is available in a variety of forms, at the really, really high end and at the low end. And
mm-hmm.
at the high end, you can go to your universities sometimes. In Maryland, we have the Michael Dingman School for Entrepreneurship at the University of Maryland, and you can go there and get connected with some entrepreneurial venture capitalists. And there's some venture capital companies in Maryland that will invest. They usually want to see a reasonable investment, though, like $1 million.
Small business, SBICs, two small business investment corporations.
SBICs, right. They also work quite well. But there are often individual entrepreneurs, or better put, venture capitals,
mm-hmm.
in communities. We have three customers right this minute where their business plans called for 50% growth rates each year for the first 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
That was beyond our funding capacity.
Right. That's right.
And there were individuals who live in our community who decided to invest
mm-hmm.
in that company in an investment fashion where they're carrying their receivables and their inventory for an above average return.
Mike, we're coming up on the end of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
We're all going to have to be more creative in the way we capitalize our businesses in the future, aren't we? Aren't
Absolutely.
Small business owners?
Thank you, Mike. There's an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, that's the good news. Thank you, Mike, for helping us today. Good job. See you next time. Michael Menzies, ladies and gentlemen, with Eastern Bank and Trust in Eastern Maryland. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.